You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Time for a deep dive into the one issue that matters most in a capitalist democracy, money. This is Maggie and the Millionaires Talking Money, a joint production of the Maggie Dawn Show and the Patriotic Millionaires. Now, let's start talking money.
What is up, Wisconsin and beyond? It is 3 o'clock, and so it is time for Maggie and the Millionaires Talking Money. I'm so excited to be joined by my special guest for this installment. Her name is Amy Hanauer. She is the executive director of the Institute on Tax and Economic Policy, a nonpartisan tax policy organization that works to bring accurate research and data to tax policy conversations. Amy spent nearly 30 years creating economic policy that advances social justice and is also the executive director for Citizens for Tax Justice, the founder of Policy Matters Ohio, and the board chair for the American Prospect Magazine. We're here today to talk about Trump's tax plan. He's promised to cut the corporate tax rate again. He's promised to extend the many tax cuts, especially to the ultra wealthy, that were part of his 2017 tax bill. He's promised to exempt overtime pay and tips from taxes and impose a new 20% tariff on imported goods. Amy's organization, shorthand ITEP, the Institute on Tax and Economic Policy, just released an absolutely groundbreaking report analyzing what would actually happen if all of Trump's policy proposals were implemented. And headline is, the results would be horrible for ordinary working Americans, because the richest 5% would get a tax cut, but the 95% of the rest of us, yeah, we'd end up paying more taxes than we do today. Let's get into that report with Amy. Amy, if you could just explain a little bit more about the baseline findings of the report. And folks, if you're listening out there and you want to read the report for yourself, we're going to have that report, the link to it, the entire report in our show notes today. You can find that at civicmedia.us. And you can always Google the Institute for Tax and Economic Policy, ITAP, and find it yourself there. But Amy, what are the headlines from your newest report?
Yeah, Maggie, thank you so much for having me on. And it's great to talk to you. And the one thing I should have put in my bio is that I spent my 20s in Wisconsin, both Madison and Milwaukee. So the state that will always be in my heart. So great to be talking to Wisconsinites again. You got it right. So my organization is called ITAP. And you can find all of our stuff at itep.org. And this morning's front page of the New York Times features together the Trump tax proposals would on average lead to a tax cut for the richest 5% of Americans and a tax increase on everyone else. And I got to tell you, Maggie, it's almost unbelievable to think that you could skyrocket the deficit to such an incredible degree and still raise taxes on working Americans. But somehow Trump has pulled that off. And the way that he has pulled that off is by making sure that it contains tax cuts of $36,000 on average for the richest 1% of households and tax increases for everybody else. And so for the middle 20%, for middle income people, they'd pay about $1,500 a year more in taxes under the Trump tax plans. Again, while the richest 1% is paying $36,000 less.
I just want to emphasize those findings because we're having a little problem hearing you, Amy. So if you could speak up as much as you can. I also put the phone number for the studio in our chat just in case you need to call in. ITEP took all of Donald Trump's tax proposals. So the tariff, the corporate tax cuts, the exemptions for tips and overtime, took all of this together, as well as the extension of his tax cuts from 2017 for billionaires and 100 millionaires. And you analyze them as a whole. That's what's really important here. And that is the appropriate analytic or analysis approach, right, to really get an idea of what the impact of these proposals would be as a whole on the middle class. And what ITEP has concluded, again, as Amy just said, the top 1%, the wealthiest of the wealthy in the United States under Trump's tax plan would see their tax go down by $36,000, while the taxes for everybody else, the regular folks, are going up. That is just incredible to me. If you include top 5% of that, everybody else is going up between your taxes would go up under the Donald Trump tax plan. But Amy, I want to ask you this. Who ends up just on an economic basis hurt the very most?
Well, I mean, I think that all of us are hurt because it ruins the deficit. So what that means, I mean, what has been the past practice is that when Republicans have a trifecta, when they have the power to replace whatever they want, they put in place policies that give large tax cuts to the very wealthiest and to corporations. And then that balloons the deficit. And then these, what Paul Krugman calls very serious people in Washington, D.C., get concerned that the deficit is high or that the debts are high and demand spending cuts. And then those spending cuts are imposed on all of the things that enable middle-class families to make it, you know, the things that make college a little teeny bit more affordable for a middle-class kid, the things that enable you to have decent education spending, to have health care, to have Social Security. They demand cuts to all of those things. So I think we're all really harmed when we see a tax bill that is this skewed, that from the get-go gives to the rich and takes away from the poor, and on top of it reduces the revenue that the federal government is bringing in. So it's really flawed.
And just today, one of the Wisconsin Senate candidates, to your point about, okay, so you give away these, basically give away money to billionaires, 100 millionaires, and the wealthiest corporations. What that ends up doing, ballooning the deficit, which then provides this predicate for conservatives to start cutting all sorts of spending, which ends up hurting middle-class Americans. Just today at the Rotary Club's luncheon, our Senate candidate, Eric Hovde, got on the stage and basically confirmed that plan, that he wants to cut Social Security, veterans benefits, and Medicare. That's what this leads inexorably to in the end sum. I wanted to focus in a bit, Ms. Hanauer, on this 20% tariff on foreign goods. This is really the centerpiece of Trump's plan. It's what he talks about all the time. Can you talk about whether tariffs are good or bad policy, and specifically then address Donald Trump's 20% tariff plan?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think that there are targeted times when tariffs can be useful to protect a domestic industry that's really, really important, to protect a domestic industry that may have something to do with national security, or to retaliate against another country that is imposing some sort of tariffs on us. But all economists agree that broadly based tariffs raise the prices paid by consumers and businesses on the goods and services that they buy. And so with these sweeping tariffs proposed by Trump, which are far larger than anything on the books today, they would end up raising the prices faced by American consumers just across the income scale. And because low and middle income families end up spending a larger share of their earnings just to make ends meet, you know, it ends up having a much bigger effect on their budget. And here's the thing, it's like anything that's imported. So take, you know, bananas. Like, we're not going to start producing bananas in Iowa, but we're going to say that consumers have to pay more for them, avocados. And so we have to think about what is it that we actually have a targeted domestic need to produce here. And then maybe there might be some role for that. But slapping tariffs on across the board just to be punitive, just to sort of show that you're stronger than some other country, is going to raise taxes for everyone. And that's what we found in our analysis, was that the middle class families were going to be paying about $1,500 a year, $1,500 a year more as a result of these plans.
Absolutely incredible. Folks, if you're interested in why is Trump so obsessed with tariffs, what is the history of these sorts of tax policy proposals? I'm going to dig into that with historian Heather Cox Richardson this Friday on my show for an entire hour starting at 2 o'clock Central. Mark your calendars. We're going to get into it. I've got the sound of Donald Trump talking about William McKinley. This was not good, folks. This led to the Gilded Era. Not good, not good at all. But I wanted to talk also, Amy, about Trump's plan to extend the already existing cuts from his 2017 Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. At the time, he said this is going to be good for the middle class. It's going to boost the economy and grow jobs. It's been 7 years since Trump's tax cuts for the wealthiest corporation, the billionaires and the 100 billionaires. Has it lived up to the hype?
You know, not at all. I mean, I think the main and most important thing that we saw is that America's largest, most consistently profitable corporations saw their effective tax rates fall after passage of the Trump tax law from an average of 22% to an average of 12.8% after the law went into effect. And so to be clear, those are lower, substantially lower than the statutory rates of taxation that those corporations are supposed to pay, because corporations don't pay all the taxes that they owe. But it still fell, you know, and there was some argument that somehow if we lowered the rate, they would pay a higher share of it. Didn't happen. They paid less, and they walked away with more of the money in our economy. And so what it means is that all of the money that working people are contributing, working people are working for, working people are producing, gets funneled into the wealthiest, the wealthiest people in our economy.
Yeah, the benefits of our work, our wage-based work, trickle up to the wealthiest in our economy. And Trump's tax proposals for his second term would only make that worth. My special guest this half hour is Amy Hanauer. She's the executive director of the Institute on Taxation and Economic Policy, which is a nonprofit, nonpartisan tax policy organization that works to do accurate research and analyze data fairly and objectively so that you can be a better voter, a more informed voter. We're going to have more with Amy after these brief messages here on the Maggie Dawn Show. We're going to talk about, what did Donald Trump do with all those corporate tax cuts? Who got wealthier? How did all that sort out? More with Amy when we come back here on Maggie and the Millionaires Talking Money on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Thanks for listening to Maggie and the Millionaires Talking Money, a joint production of Civic Media and the Patriotic Millionaires. For more information, go to patrioticmillionaires.org and be sure to tell your friends. The Patriotic Millionaires buy advertising across a number of Civic Media stations. Time for a deep dive into the one issue that matters most in a capitalist democracy, money. This is Maggie and the Millionaires Talking Money, a joint production of the Maggie Dawn Show and the Patriotic Millionaires. Now, let's start talking money.
Welcome back, everybody, or welcome if you're just joining us. My name's Maggie Dawn. I'm the host of the Maggie Dawn Show, and we convene every day at 3 o'clock for Maggie and the Millionaires Talking Money. My special guest this half hour is Amy Hanauer, the executive director of the Institute on Taxation and Economic Policy. If you go to itep.org, you can find out more about their work and read their groundbreaking report just issued today that analyzes the impacts on the middle class of the collective Donald Trump tax proposals for his second term. Importantly, ITEP is a nonprofit and nonpartisan tax policy organization that works so that you and I can be better and more informed voters. Amy, wanted to jump right back in. What was the up, like, what did Donald Trump do with the tax cuts? Like, how did he make that work? Did that inure to some benefit to Donald Trump, those tax cuts in 2017? Like, I don't get it. They exploded the deficit. They hurt the middle class. So what was the point?
Yeah, I mean, I think that what we know about Donald Trump and his sort of policy priorities is that he believes that, the Republican Party wants to increase wealth inequality. There is not a priority in sort of increasing the income of the middle class and certainly of the low income families in this country. I think there's a real priority of keeping Americans divided from each other by race and by gender. And, you know, that it feeds into his priorities when the wealthy get wealthier and he's able to we're not political analysts, but able to get the political contributions from that group of people. So I think that that's part of what was going on with him. But I think that what the policy really did was to just enable corporations to pay lower taxes and enable wealthy people to pay lower taxes. And that's very consistent with a lot of things that he has always prioritized in his career.
I want to ask you, one of the things that I hear frequently from people is, look, those tax cuts are really good for small businesses. It's not about these massive corporations. It's about all of these small businesses. Did small businesses benefit most from Trump's tax cuts?
Yeah, I mean, the 296 largest and most consistently profitable U.S. corporations paid $240 billion less in taxes between 2018 and 2021 than if they had continued to pay the rates they'd paid before the Trump tax law. The profits of huge corporations rose by 44%, but their federal tax bills dropped by 16%. So it was not something that was directed towards small businesses. Small businesses struggle to make a profit. Small businesses often don't even pay their taxes through the court in a different way. And this is just not what that was the priority.
There's also a very real, what I'm going to call viability impact on small businesses when you see these massive corporations absolutely exploding their profit margins and paying so much less in taxes. And that is, taxes support infrastructure. Taxes support public education, which trains workers. Infrastructure allows for the movement of goods, the movement of the products that small businesses want to sell, the supply that they need to build their products, all sorts of things. And when large corporations effectively dodge their fair share of the tax burden, it makes it harder on smaller businesses simply by virtue of there are fewer tax dollars to directly invest in small businesses through various tax credits. And it weakens the ability of governments, local, state, and federal, to invest in public education, to invest in affordable childcare that enables workers to be able to work and be productive for small businesses. It lessens the ability of government to invest in our roads, bridges, and infrastructure necessary for the movement of goods. That all hurts small businesses as well. If he's reelected, Trump wants to cut corporate taxes even more. But do corporations really need another tax cut? Like, are corporations struggling right now, Amy?
Yeah, no, I mean, corporate profits are up and corporate tax payments are down. And, you know, some of the largest, most well-known corporations in the country, Walmart, Verizon, Disney, Meta, are some of those that had the largest tax reductions after the Trump tax law. And I think it is actually very self-defeating because some of the things that you were saying really relate to businesses of all sizes. You know, they all need a well-trained workforce. They all need an adequate infrastructure that can enable them to get their products out to market. And so it's pretty self-defeating, and I think it's pretty short-term. I think a better investment for most small businesses is to make sure that working people are able to get by on what they're paid, and to make sure that we have affordable childcare in this country, that college is affordable in this country. So I look at some of the things that, like what we did during the pandemic, where we increased the child tax credit. We cut child poverty nearly in half while putting a lot of money into the pockets of middle-income families, basically any family that had a kid. That made it easier for people to get by. And so at a time, you know, when unemployment was the highest it's been in many, many decades, we didn't really take a big economic hit because we helped people out and helped them get through that time. So yeah, I from think a tax, there's a lot like that we could do.
Yeah, from a tax cut perspective, Amy, the tax cuts that would help small businesses the most are tax cuts that would benefit middle class and working people the most. That's not what Donald Trump is proposing. And the reason that tax cuts for middle and working people, that those should be prioritized and we should be taxing wealthy people more, is that middle class people, working people, actually consume the products that small businesses sell and they need the money to do so. And so tax cuts that benefit middle class and working people will be the tax cuts that unlock the power of small businesses and supercharge that, not tax cuts for the wealthiest and the largest, most consistently profitable corporations. Last question, Amy. Donald Trump plans to exempt from income tax tips and overtime. Will this have some unintended effects? Very briefly, you got about 20 seconds.
Well, you know, there are really good ways to protect workers who work overtime, and President Trump weakened the existing system designed to deliver overtime pay. He was recently recorded saying that he hated to pay overtime to his own workers. Look, we want people to be paid overtime, but that we do that through, it should be employers that pay that, not the taxpayers.
Thanks so much. That's Amy Hanauer, the Executive Director of the Institute on Taxation and Economic Policy. Go to itep.org to find their report and more. It'll also be in our show notes at civicmedia.us.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
What's up, Wisconsin? Welcome back, or welcome if you're just joining us. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Really pumped to talk to my next guest. Her name is Kira Butler. She works for Mother Jones Magazine. You can find her work at motherjones.com. She has been doing some incredible reporting on, at a very high level, what I'm going to call the Christian nationalist evangelical movement. But she's done some real digging and interviewing of folks involved in the movement. Her two most recent articles that really caught my eye, the first came out around the end, mid-September, was called "To Understand J.D. Vance, You Need to Meet the Theo Bros." And more recently, this article, "Christian Nationalists Dream of Taking Over America. This movement is actually doing it." Welcome, Kira. Thanks so much for making time. Let's just dig right in. Who are the Theo Bros and why does this matter?
Well, thank you so much for having me, Maggie. I'm so happy to be here. So the Theo Bros are a group of mostly millennial, and I say mostly because there's one notable exception, which we'll talk about. But they are mostly millennial pastors and Christian influencers who are, they call themselves Reformed. This is a kind of a Calvinist view of Christianity. And they hold some very extreme beliefs. And they take these beliefs to platforms like social media, like podcasts, like these conferences that they're constantly having that have these kind of provocative names. And they bring these ideas to a kind of a wider, younger audience using these means. And, you know, when we talk about extreme beliefs and the Theo Bros, I always try to point out that not all of them hold every one of these beliefs. But some of the most common ones that you hear these folks espousing include that the Constitution is dead and instead should be replaced by the Ten Commandments, that women shouldn't vote, that, you know, the 19th Amendment was a mistake. Many of them are fans of Francisco Franco. He was the Spanish dictator. Many of them believe that they call themselves Christian nationalists quite openly, and they believe that America should be ruled by what they call a Christian prince or magistrate. They believe, many of them believe that heretics should be executed. Many of them believe that gay people, LGBTQ people, are heretics and therefore should be punished by execution. They talk about prison reform, but by prison reform, they mean replacing prison sentences with public flogging. I think those are some of the greatest hits.
Yeah, one additional one that jumped out at me, which was so jaw-dropping from your article, is not just the embrace of Franco and dictatorship, the idea of a Christian prince, right, which implies yet no woman ever is going to lead this country because women shouldn't even be voting. The 19th Amendment, oh, that was a huge mistake, was this from, and I believe this guy's name is Doug Wilson, who argued, and he's tried to move away from this a bit. This is, again, from my very special guest, Kira Butler's Theo Bro's article in Mother Jones from mid-September. He argued this in his 1996 book, Southern Slavery, quote, that the master-slave dynamic was a, quote, relationship based on mutual affection and confidence, end quote, and basically argued that there has never been a multiracial society which has existed with such mutual intimacy and harmony in the history of the world as that of the antebellum South. Now, he's tried to distance himself a little bit from that, but that is what he wrote. It is in his book.
That's right. And that's actually, you know, I mentioned at the beginning of our conversation, the one exception to the millennial rule of the Theo Bros, and that's Doug Wilson. He's in his 70s. He is in Moscow, Idaho, where he's kind of created his own little Christian fiefdom. He's the head pastor and founder of Christ Church. And he helped start a K-12 classical school there. He helped start a college, New St. Andrews College, and he helped start a printing press there, Canon Press, that publishes many of his books and his homeschool curriculum and books by other like-minded people as well. And Doug Wilson has a history of saying some pretty extreme stuff and then, you know, kind of saying, well, that's not quite what I meant, that he kind of walks it back a little bit. He is a gifted communicator. His writing is very funny. And he makes these videos that, you know, are very slickly produced. He has every November he does something called No Quarter November, where he says exactly what he means. And he makes these trailer videos that are just kind of over the top. He told me that his children, who are millennials and maybe some Gen Z kids as well, help him produce those.
It's, you know, the word sane washing has become very en vogue. And what I think is really remarkable, whether we're talking about, again, the millennial Theo Bros or Mr. Wilson, who's been around for a long time at this, is that by a combination of rhetorical flourish and wit, they are able to sane wash insane, totally extreme ideas and sort of repackage them to sound plausible, maybe even desirable. But when you strip it back, it is just as offensive as saying slavery was good and it was a harmonious relationship is to anyone's normal and reasonable ear. Here's another claim that Doug Wilson has made. Again, part of these Theo Bros that my special guest, Kira Butler of Mother Jones, has written about most recently in one of her articles. You can find them at motherjones.com. Mr. Doug Wilson said that women might be culpable in rape and talked about how empathy is not really a good thing. And extolled the virtues of, quote, something called the patriarchy, that which, according to our soi-disant and lisping political theories, must be smashed. I can't even, like, women's culpability in rape, that empathy's a bad thing? What's going on? Like, what? Why is this a thing? Why has Wilson sort of skyrocketed in popularity? Why is this sort of reaching its epoch right now? It seems to be an explosion in this sort of ideologies and their appeal.
Well, you know, I think one point that's important to make is that Doug Wilson is not doing this on his own. He has been platformed by people who have real political power. This summer in July, he appeared at the National Conservatism Conference in Washington, D.C., alongside J.D. Vance. This is, you know, this is the big time. This is not, you know, him in Moscow, Idaho, like, you know, on a podcast listened to by two people. The other thing about the Thea Bros is that they're close to people in Silicon Valley who have a lot of money and a lot of power because of how much money they have. There are photos of J.D. Vance appearing with some Thea Bros, and I'm not exactly sure what event that photo was taken at, but one possibility is something having to do with the Rockbridge Network, which is a project, a collective of wealthy Republican donors that J.D. Vance is involved in, and that Peter Thiel, yes. Silicon Valley billionaire, is involved in, and that some Thea Bros are involved in as well. So, you know, it's not just that these folks are saying this stuff and that people are like, gosh, that sounds like a great idea. You know, women are culpable in rape. It's that they're being platformed.
Yeah. One of the things that I think a lot of recent reporting, and again, congratulations and thank you for the work that you've been doing, Kira, is that there is this way more overlapping set. It's not even a Venn diagram. It's just this overlapping sets of, I call them these different groups of bros, right? Like there's the Theo bros, there's the tech bros, there's the billionaire bros, there's the cryptocurrency bros. I mean, it's like, what other, and then the dictatorship bros, the Curtis Yarvises, and they're all feeding, it's like this one ecosystem, and it's got a foothold for almost any disaffected man, right? There is a place, there is a foothold, there is someone spinning this extremism in a way that will appeal, and again, is designed to seem normal when it is absolutely insane and abnormal. Are you fine? I mean, you've been noting some of these connections, but it is really this overwhelming interwoven networks of all of these different bros. And folks, if you're listening, the theme here is bros, right? This is not a women-led or a women-inclusive sort of movement.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting that you should mention that, because today, or maybe it was yesterday, but I saw it today, Doug Wilson actually on his blog wrote a response to my article. And he said, it's so anti-feminist of Mother Jones not to talk about all of the accomplishments of the women in this movement. And so he listed, you know, his wife, I guess, has written some homeschool curriculum. And I think his daughters have written some textbooks as well. And he, you know, he kind of criticized, I think, in a rhetorical flourish kind of way, said, yeah, you know, how dare Mother Jones be so anti-woman? But, you know, notably, his wife and his daughters are not the ones who are out there on podcasts and with their blogs and, you know, leading these conferences and talking at national conservatism. It's the men.
It always is. And it's like, oh, well, what are the roles of those women that you're extolling as leaders in this weird, bizarre, Christian nationalist, ultra-dictatory, weird AI, whatever? Oh, yeah, you can write the textbook for homeschooling, right? You could, and the what are they, the woman's sort of analogous movement of being a trad wife, meaning a traditional wife and like adopting this secondary role, acknowledging the superiority of men, both in work, but especially in the home as the final decision maker. That's what they're talking about. It's like, oh yeah, there's ladies leading from behind me and in their place in the kitchen and the schoolroom.
Well, and something that I think is worth pointing out is that these ideas may sound extreme in the way that, you know, a Doug Wilson or a Joel Webbin or a Brian Sauvay talk about them, but really they're not so far off from some of the policy ideas that J.D. Vance has advanced. And one example of that is this idea of household voting. Maybe yes, some of your listeners remember that J.D. Vance was saying that he believed that parents should be able to vote basically for their children, that children should have a vote that is kind of mediated through their parents. And that basically is, that idea is household voting. And the Theo Bros, many of the Theo Bros also believe in this, but they believe that men as the head of households should be responsible for those votes. So that means the votes of their wives as well. So this is really a Theo Bro idea that J.D. Vance repackaged to sort of make his point about, you know, what he sees as the superior value of people with children to people without children in America.
Yeah, it's all part of a whole. And folks, if you think, oh, well, this stuff can't actually happen. No. The Ten Commandments are now posted in schoolrooms in some states, right? Textbooks have been entirely rewritten to remove the portions of American history that these Theo Bros and the Christian nationalists don't want to acknowledge or address. Kira, I could talk to you for hours about this. I would love it if you could come back. Thank you for your excellent reporting. She's Kira Butler, journalist with Mother Jones. You can find her work at motherjones.com. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Folks, up next, just got word we've got a very special guest joining us. I've got Michael Hart, a FEMA spokesperson. We're going to talk about the federal government's response to both Hurricane Helene as well as our response to Milton. Join us again, Michael Hart, FEMA spokesman, up next here on the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. What's up, Wisconsin? Welcome back, or welcome if you're just joining us. My name's Maggie Dawn, host of this, the Maggie Dawn Show, here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Next up, folks, you're going to be listening to the Dom Salvia Show. He takes over for me across the network at 4 p.m. He's going to be joined today by Mark Becker, host of the weekend podcast and live radio show here on the Civic Media Radio Network called The Rational Revolution. Recently, Mark sat down with Vice President Harris and talked with Liz Cheney following their joint appearance in Ripon, Wisconsin. Dom's going to dig in with Mark about those discussions. I can't wait to listen to it. You're going to want to keep it locked. But folks, I have to say, as we wait for Mr. Michael Hart, FEMA spokesperson, to join us, hopefully momentarily here, we got to set the stage because Senate candidate Eric Hovde has said basically a stream of BS and lies about the federal government's emergency response. All of these lies and misinformation now being pointed to by the governors of the affected states, including Republican governors, as hampering our collective response at state, local, and federal governmental levels to get people the help that they need. Fighting misinformation and these lies has now become a full-time job for many of these officials. FEMA now has a special website dedicating to debunking this baloney. But Calvin, let's take a listen to the craziness from Senate candidate Eric Hovde.
Did you see the news today that FEMA is out of money and doesn't have money to transfer to those people affected by the hurricane? Why? Because they use the money to assist illegal immigrants. You can't make this craziness up. So we're not going to help
you can, Eric.
Americans that are in trouble or our vets, but we're going to give it to people coming into our country illegally? What kind of world are we living in today? This is what Joe Biden, Kamala Harris, and Senator Baldwin, who supports all this craziness, have brought on our country. It's like we've entered into Alice in Wonderland, and what is right is wrong, and what is wrong is right. Please share this with people you know.
But no, please
get
don't.
Get the word out.
No,
we have to take
don't.
Back our country. That's the whole reason I'm in this race, because I couldn't sit by anymore
From
and watch
whom?
My country that I love melt down. So please get out there, work hard, spread the word. We've got to win this election.
Not these words, though. Eric Hovde is one of those guys that makes me so angry I can barely see straight. Everything he just said there is a lie, okay? Let me be really clear about how FEMA works, okay? Very clear about this. FEMA is not one pot of money. That's not how governmental budgeting goes. FEMA has multiple pots of money. One of those pots of money is indeed called the Shelter and Services Program. Because yes, indeed, we have seen an explosion in people that have come to our country. And rather than having people out on the street, the Shelter and Services Program, which is its own line item in FEMA's budget, does help provide humanitarian aid to relieve the burden on local governments who have large populations of immigrants to help feed and shelter these people. That is a separate budget line item decided in the congressional budgeting process, okay? That is one distinct, put a box around it, pot of money in FEMA. There's another pot of money in FEMA that is called the Disaster Relief Fund. That is the money, as directed by Congress, you lying moron Eric Hovde. It is the Disaster Relief Fund that dispatches and is spent to give direct aid to people that have been victimized by Hurricane Helene and now the incoming onslaught of Milton. These are separate pots of money. Now, the only person, the only president that's ever taken money out of the Disaster Relief Fund and given it and put it to purposes for people that have migrated to this country, the person that raided the Disaster Relief Fund, that person's name is Donald Trump. That's who did that. Now, Ron DeSantis, no friend of liberals, has gone on the record and has said FEMA is providing everything that we've asked for. The federal government is doing everything that we've asked. That is the point. Okay? FEMA has not run out of money. This is so dangerous. This is such disgusting and despicable lies from Mr. I don't know anything Hovde, but that won't prevent me from flapping my gums. Here's another lie that's been trafficked. That people only get $750. Lie. There's an emergency fund that people are given those $750 from that's just supposed to get you food and water to get through the days immediately following these kinds of natural disasters. And after that, you apply to FEMA for some of that millions and millions of dollars for additional support and aid. Shame on you, Hovde. Apologies, we weren't able to get the FEMA spokesperson. They're very busy. We'll try again tomorrow. Folks, that's going to do it for me. Shame on you, Eric Hovde. Quit lying. It's dangerous and irresponsible. You're not qualified to tie my shoes, let alone represent me or anybody else listening in the U.S. Senate. Dom Salvia is up next. Keep it locked. And remember, I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me, but it's always better when we stand together for the truth.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.